Hello and welcome to Health Affairs This Week. I'm your host, Jeff Byers. Oh, hey, what's up? Hello. Before we get into the episode on Walmart Health and retail clinics, I wanted to quickly share that Health Affairs released a new issue this week. It includes some research on Medicare, such as the role of health risk assessments that play in Medicare Advantage enrollees' risk score. Also, we published the first article in our Hard to Say journal series, Eye on IRA, where authors examine the effects of Medicare Part D benefit design on the uptake of biosimilars. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Check the show notes to order your copy. If you haven't submitted to the You're a Health Policy Wonk If contest, now's the time. It's simple. Complete the sentence, "You're a health policy wonk if," and you are in the running for a free online journal subscription for a year. And now, joining me on the program today to talk about the demise of Walmart Health is Health Affairs' very own Jessica Bylander. Jessica, welcome to the program.
Hey, Jeff. Nice to be here.
So just up front, we are not business consultants. So if you disagree with something that we say, you know, shoot us a line. communications@healthaffairs.org is where you can find us. So, Jessica, Walmart Health is shutting down. So what's the top line? What's happening?
Yeah, so I actually remember coming on the podcast last year to talk about Walmart and its kind of like endeavors in the health space, like opening new clinics and offering some other offerings. And so we found out at the end of April that actually they're kind of giving up on that entire unit of their business. So they had 51 health centers across five states in the U.S. They were mostly, I think, in Florida and Georgia. So they decided to kind of forego that business, which is a bit of a reversal. They actually had said in March that they were going to open even more clinics. And then, you know, by early April had kind of scaled it back. And so obviously have decided to change course altogether. So kind of a big deal for people who are watching the space to see how retailers, big retailers like Walmart, are going to be, what kind of like footprint they're going to have in the healthcare space.
Yeah, I noticed that the same week, maybe even the same day that was announced, Walmart announced it would debut a premium food line. Did you see this?
I didn't.
It was it's aimed at higher income shoppers that might be feeling the effects of inflation and so therefore driving to Walmart for their groceries instead.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I was thinking that this may mean they're making a social determinants play.
Yeah, I have heard in the past that they were, you know, looking to get into more social determinants, providing kind of food and other social necessities. And of course, they obviously have their pharmacy lines and their vision care. So there is some care being delivered in terms of, like, you know, flu shots and testing and stuff like that. But no longer can you go to a Walmart Health for primary care, behavioral health care, dental, or any of those services.
So with Walmart, very, very large company, we've seen a lot of bigger companies try to wade into the healthcare space. Haven Health, which was a joint venture for Berkshire Hathaway, Amazon, and JP Morgan. A failed example at that. It was one example. Jess, what can you tell us about this Walmart Health effort in relation to the context of big companies trying to enter this space?
Yeah, it's definitely one of a trend. And I forgot to mention, but so Walmart Health kind of made its play in this space in 2019. But yeah, like Walgreens, for example, they also invested heavily in primary care. And they did so by buying Village MD for, you know, like a lot of money. And actually, you know, it's not going as well as planned. And so they also recently announced they'd be closing, I think, 140 of the Village MD clinics in March. And they had some plans to close some more because it was just really driving kind of a loss mm-hmm. on their bottom line. And then other players that I'm familiar with, CVS Health, I think we all know, has been making increasing plays in actual healthcare service delivery in addition to sort of, you know, pharmacy and all the spaces they already operate. I think we reported last year they spent like $10 billion to acquire Oak Street Health Centers, which are for seniors covered by Medicare. And then Amazon, of course, as you mentioned, there was that failed venture, but they did also acquire One Medical. I think that business appears to be doing okay, though. I think they did announce that they would be cutting some of their healthcare jobs this year.
Listeners can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe they are expanding One Medical, but Amazon curtailed their Amazon retail clinic service that I think was employee. Yeah, I think it was for employees. A lot of these plays that we've mentioned are in the retail clinic space. And in the context of retail clinics, I was looking for like, what does it take to, you know, prop up a retail clinic and what are the ongoing costs of a retail clinic? And I found this 2020 Wolters Kluwer, however you say that, article, where they put the cost of starting a medical practice around $70,000 to $100,000. And then you, on top of that, have an average monthly cost of $6,000 a month, which is not short change. Maybe for some of these big companies, it can be a tax write-off, but that's real money, which is interesting to think about when you talk about these retail clinic businesses.
Yeah. When Walmart announced that they were closing Walmart Health Clinics, they did cite that this just wasn't a sustainable business model. They said the labor costs and the operating costs were too high, and also just like the reimbursement environment from both public and private payers was just really complicated. And so, yeah, and it is tough. And I know primary care especially can be, you know, difficult to make ends meet. You know, sometimes health facilities rely more on specialty care to kind of make up for the lower reimbursement there might be for primary care services. So it is definitely a very challenging healthcare space.
And Walgreens, I noticed, took about a $6 billion hit, so they said, on this Village MD bet. I don't know. I don't want to editorialize too much. And we've gone over ad nauseum, you know, not just us, but the healthcare industry as a whole, of how like hard this business and industry is. But I will say it's a little wild, or like, I don't want to say sad because I'm not weeping for Walmart, but at the same time, you would think that they might have the resources to be able to like make this work. And so to me, it's a little shocking that they didn't.
Yeah. I've read some stuff online, you know, if Walmart can't make it work, who can? And it is really interesting to kind of question what did go wrong more specifically. And, you know, I'd seen some things sort of like, people want to go to a big box retailer for discrete things like a flu shot, but they don't necessarily feel like they're establishing like a primary care relationship there. I'm not sure. I think obviously there was a lot of promise to it, especially in rural areas or areas that had kind of shortages of other types of healthcare facilities. And there is a Walmart there. So it does in some ways seem like a big lost opportunity. And maybe there'll be something else in the future that kind of solves whatever went wrong in this situation.
Yeah. And in one of their services that Walmart was shutting down, they're also shutting down their telehealth service as well. Telehealth has seen brighter days, I would think, with its long history of trying to become a mainstream product, which leads me to, there's an article in our May issue about the telehealth medicine utilization trends. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I think on April 17th, we published this as an ahead of print. The authors are Carter Nakamoto and colleagues, and they're talking about the impact of telemedicine on healthcare use, spending, and quality over the past few years. So obviously the COVID-19 pandemic drove, you know, a huge boom in telehealth use. But they were finding sort of like the trend is cooling down. And I think others have talked about this as well. So telemedicine use does remain higher than it was before COVID-19 pandemic, but, it's definitely really fallen from those kind of heydays of when it was among the only options for getting care.
Real quick, I do want to note that the heyday is not, wasn't a golden era for a lot of different reasons, but telehealth wasn't a big driver of visits before then. Like, I can't remember, there was a Fair Health report many, many years ago that showed that the utilization was very, very, very low. And I'm not going to put numbers to it because I don't remember it. But so having such an increase in telemedicine usage during the pandemic was building off of a very low bar. It has been I was interested that whether this utilization or these trends for telehealth would sustain themselves. And it seems like maybe it's better than the baseline was pre-2020, but definitely not as when, you know, now that people can leave their homes, maybe it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, definitely a lot of infrastructure was put into place during the pandemic that I think does pave the way for it to be used more seamlessly. And I think the learning curve of it has kind of been overcome in some ways. So we'll see what happens. But I suspect it'll remain higher than it had been before that kind of learning curve was overcome.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. Yeah. I find it helpful, but yeah.
Well, with that, I think we've learned a lot about the telehealth space, the retail clinic space, what the big companies have tried to do in the healthcare space. Is there anything else that we didn't know that you think we should let our listeners know about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the landscape's changing so much. You know, I didn't mention, but also United Health Group announced that they were shutting down their Optum virtual care business. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think the bottom line is things are changing so rapidly in this space, but for good reason. I think innovation is necessary to meet the demands for care and also the kind of high cost of care.
Yeah. Well, that's a great place to wrap up. Jessica, thanks for joining us today on Health Affairs This Week. And if you, the listener, enjoyed this, please tell a friend about it. Send it to someone in the telehealth or retail clinic space and tell them to let us know why we were wrong or how we were wrong. And subscribe. Make sure they subscribe and leave a review. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, bye.